capture.
We have some employee recognitions to do. So I bring up your voice department.
I've got Sean Dykstead with us. He's been our maintenance supervisor out at the plant for about 4 years now. And he served up here in operations before that. He's been a stellar employee for us and works hard. And I just thank Sean for 15 years.
Okay, and then I have some employees that passed some tests. For a guy that passed the class two is Jacob Huckabee and Alex Leprell. For our class three, which actually gives the guys a raise, we have Austin Fields, Josh Leyva, Jason Sandlin, David Ingram, Aaron Beeson, Ryan McGuffin, and Rodney Reno. I'll pass their three and everything in their collection system. And then Travis Travolti, he just got his four water license and everything. So, but actually lost two water license, one to retirement, one went and started his own business. So it helps us now to get those two back so we maintain the minimum that we need to have of licensed class four operators in the state.
That's great.
Thank you, John.
And wanted to just share this with you. This is from Black Hills Energy, and they've been having some meetings up here. We've been meeting with foreign companies on and off under the new Arkansas laws and stuff. And they presented this to the Rogers Water Utilities for their partnership of excellent and preventive maintenance. In the city of Rogers, Black Hills Energy is like at 85% hits, which is that's the lowest in the state of Arkansas. And we even up there in the top 10 in the nation of hits to gas lines and stuff here in Rogers and stuff with the program that we run with our foreign companies and stuff where we have the pre-cons and stuff. We allow Black Hills to come in, meet with them, give them all our information and stuff. So that's helped them, helped us greatly too. But they wanted to recognize us for working with them.
Congratulations.
Awesome. Is it Josh Knight you work with?
Josh Knight?
Yeah, with Black Hills when y'all do the boring.
No, we work with, golly, my mind's been blank. I can see him. I can't think. But he's their damage prevention guy, and that's who we mainly deal with. So if we have any problems, he's right up there under the top guy. So, and this is the first one that they've given. So
that's great.
Yay!
Well done.
All right. We'll move on to approve the minutes from the August 21st, 2023 Water Sewer Commission meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from the August 21st Water and Sewer Commission meeting.
I'll second.
We've got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The ayes carry 5-0. And moving on to the reports, financial report.
Good afternoon. Welcome, Paige, to your first meeting.
Thank you.
I went ahead and put an email in here from Landmark. They come back tomorrow. We'll be here till Thursday or possibly Friday until they finish. They did not get finished the first time. And we don't have all the reports, but I do have July's numbers now for you, and those are in front of you too. I don't think I'll just read them and reiterate what's in there. We're real close to what we were in July of 22, a little above for 23. The numbers are all over the place, and that kind of comes to the artwork, as Kathy called it, that I put in front of you. And if you look at that white line on the graph, that's our daily water usage from Beaver Water District. And as you can tell, in the summertime, it's a crapshoot to try to figure out what's going to happen. But if you look at all of these and you take them year over year, this is from April 1, which would be kind of the start of the irrigation season. It should end up here in the next few weeks. But 2023 over 2022, we're 5 and 5.14% down. 23 over 21, we're 6.72 down. However, that big spike that you see is when we kept Bentonville running for 17 days. So it's really kind of hard to flesh that out. And then if you take 2023 over 2020, we're over 11% higher for the same period of time. But you just see a lot of, you know, we try to be conservative when we estimate for that or budget for it. But you can see from this graph, it's just all over the place, and it's up to Mother Nature ultimately what we get.
Do you have the capacity in your system to break that between meters and homes and irrigation? So if you said, you know, because you think about our population continues to grow, and you would think that with population growth, you're going to see a home usage. So just a mere, can you break that out and say, okay, what's the irrigation piece versus the home piece? Because that, I would think the home piece would have somewhat of a trend line that would continue up.
Correct.
Now, we all know irrigation is going to be subject to rain events or people usage. So yeah. I would be curious to see what that looked like.
We're going to do that.
Extracted it out just to say, okay, so as you plan forward, you're planning residential, and most of those residential, well, maybe some of that.
You're bringing up a lot of things here. Exactly right. So moving forward, we will take a look at that really hard with our rate study. And traditionally, you know, if you look at the historical rate growth, it was single-family residential. Well, that's not going to happen at the clip it was. Now you've got a lot denser, a lot more apartments, a lot less grass. So we feel like the growth in just regular domestic usage is going to keep going at a totally different clip than the rate of irrigation usage.
Are y'all forcing your single family that comes through to do a double meter set on them just for, even if they say, yeah, these homes aren't going to do irrigation, they're a smaller home?
Haven't forced that. We've had some developers that will put in one meter that runs both, but then the folks are paying sewer on their irrigation. Yeah. Most put...
For single family residential, our general rule of thumb is if the lot's wider than 60 feet,
yeah,
we have to put a double meter set in there. If it's narrower than 60 feet, we assume that they're not going to have irrigation.
Yeah, we don't force them into it, but we strongly encourage that, because I just didn't know if that was a policy.
And my thought process is really more about planning. I know the 2016 study, we talked a lot about the Western expansion and trying to plan for that, and that really kind of went away. Well, it's gone away for now. That doesn't mean that it may not come back at some point. But then looking at just the mixed use, everything seems to be mixed use now that's being built in higher capacity. And just as you look forward, is, you know, us being able to stay far enough in front of that growth curve to make sure that we're getting dryers and we're getting lines put in.
It really is amazing. I think Chris and Ryan put that in their presentation, but you know what it was just in 2016 to what we're looking at now. A lot different.
A lot different.
And certainly a lot different than it was in 2008.
Well,
this is
interesting.
Our crystal ball. No, yeah, we don't have a.
Well, the land mass, just the fact that you check out that. Trying to figure out how you're going to handle that land mass and what that land mass looks like, how it's going to develop out. And now you kind of pull it back in, you get higher density along the 49 corridor. And so I don't know how that density, when you're looking at mixed use, more apartment units versus single family, it's got to look a lot different in how you even plan into it. Because I think every street in Rogers has got someone digging in it. And whether that's utilities, I'm not sure who all's doing the digging, but there's a lot. Someone's digging somewhere for something.
Absolutely. Total restricted and unrestricted funds are $48 million. That's an overall increase of 3.7 from last year. And we're going to try to spend some of that here.
Any movement on filling that position?
We're getting closer.
Have you started interviewing people?
Yes, we've been interviewing people for a while.
Great.
But I think we've got it down to a few. So this week and next week we'll be doing some more interviews. Hopefully by the next commission meeting we'll have some.
Jennifer's a tough one to replace.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Could not recall what order the agenda was in.
Again, our discharge monitoring report looks good. No significant issues there. Fairly slow month on flow and large events. Our pre-treatment activities, those guys are keeping busy. You know, trying to visit a couple of industrial sites and trying to keep, you know, where we're visiting all of our food service establishments at least once a year. And then trying to make sure we keep track of, you know, issues and keep on top of those. If you have questions about any of the specifics on this, I'd be happy to answer them.
I do have a question on that surcharge. It's same names, poultry companies, same names each, every month we look at that.
Yes, sir.
And I know that they're paying a surcharge for, I'm assuming that's additional charges. Is there any risk? I mean, tell me a little bit more about what, because Ozark Mountain Poultry, maybe they just built it in their budget to have $5,000 or $6,000 a month. Is there a risk in what they're doing? And they're paying a surcharge.
Yes, sir. So you've got on their, they have a discharge report or a discharge permit, just like we do to the creek. They have a discharge permit to our sewer system. They have two, I don't say limits, but they have two levels. They have a what is considered acceptable level where they don't get any surcharges or anything. Then they have a second tier where they, if they exceed that, that becomes a violation. And so they try to operate in the most economical way they can to maximize their profits. Well, before our last permit, we had no surcharges essentially for anything except for phosphorus. What we found was our aerators were maxed out, and really we were struggling to get enough aeration in to treat the plant. Now, we upgraded the two trains, which helped that significantly, gave us some more treatment capacity. But there's a cost associated with that. So whenever we did our last rate study, we looked at what does it cost to actually treat that additional strength that industrial users are sending us. And we came up with a per gallon, or actually a per pound is really what it comes down to, a per pound of additional waste load that they're sending us, and that's what's being applied. They have the option to upgrade their in-house treatment to remove that there at their facility, and then they don't pay that surcharge. But what they've evaluated is we can treat it for less than they can. Now, Brent alluded to our next rate study, and you know, energy prices have went up, our sludge costs have went up, you know, all the things have went up because of inflation. So my guess is that number will go up on the next review when we look at what does it actually cost us to treat. And then it'll be up to them to do that math, whether they figure they can treat it for less than we do or not. But it's an effort to keep industry from being subsidized for their treatment by the residences. So our rates are set based on what a residential rate is. And then for industry to come in and send us a heavy loading, we just make sure that we're not subsidizing industry.
You've hit the point that I wanted to make, and that is that when I look at that and I think if I'm maybe a poultry company, I can spend $5,800, it's cheap for me just to pass that to someone else. And then we're sitting here looking at infrastructure improvements that are very costly.
Yes, sir.
So I'm just, my point would be is that if I'm one of these or anybody that has a surcharge for, you know, $70,000 a year, I'm just going to bake that in the cost. I'm going to pass it on to you and for us to deal with that. So I just encourage us that when, especially when we start looking at the cost of the equipment that we're having to put in to be able to take care of everyone, to have an industry or someone who basically says, I'm going to pass it along to someone else. Just make sure that those surcharges are appropriate because we're putting in a lot of capital improvements and those are expensive. When you look at the numbers that we're looking at today, you know, dryers and things that cost millions of dollars. So just that you hit the point that I wanted, and that was because as I've only been here a short period of time, it's just every month it's kind of the same cast of characters. So you just build in $1,500 and you guys worry about it. So,
yes, sir. And that's what's happening. They've done the math on it.
Sure.
We can't do it for that. It's less expensive for us to let the city treat that.
And as long as we have that covered to where we're including everything in that, to where we're not charging somebody else to pay for that. So
the trick to that is, I say trick, but the math on that is, large infrastructure is generally from flow issues. The equipment within the structures is generally for treatment. So the majority of the cost is actually the energy and the labor to actually get the pollutant out of the water and out of the watershed. That's where the majority of that additional cost comes from, because the strength is really irrelevant to the size, if you will.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so what I was, right. my thought was just...
No, your point is well made. Any other questions before I move on?
You brought up phosphorus. I have a question since we're talking rate studies.
Yeah. So let's say if little Osage that you dump into goes into an impaired stream list, the 303D list,
sure.
Does that automatically kick in a new rate study because you all have to treat it, refine it a lot more before you can dump it into an impaired stream?
No.
I mean, as far as the surcharges that we're charging...
No. Actually, if you want to get technical about it, Oklahoma has designated Illinois as an impaired stream because they designated it as a scenic river or some kind of... I can't remember. But it's a state designation, yeah. In Oklahoma. It's not a federal 303. But either way, that's not what actually triggers it. What triggers it is when we have to do a new permit.
Yeah.
Then we have to change what our treatment point is. But Arkansas law dictates that we have to do a rate study 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years. So that's really what we're hitting on this is the state law requirement to make sure we're fiscally sound.
Okay.
Anything better? Today we'll let Brian handle our solids handling project. We're ready for a bid review on that, and spent some time there. We're pretty excited about that. We are working hard on our CityWorks implementation on trying to figure out what data goes where. So overall, that's a good month whenever there's no significant events within the plan itself, and we're working for the future stuff. But we did treat almost 300 million gallons in August. You know, on an 8.5 MGD day, that's 263.5. It's 34 million gallons for INI. Now, here's the interesting part. That's 6 inches of rain over 7 events. And it all happened right at the beginning of, or at the end of August and September. So I look back, I'm like, well, that was actually a pretty easy event for us, other than lightning. For flows, it really wasn't bad. So I look back at what's historically speaking, what we've dealt with. And so I looked at August of 22, and I'm like, okay, well, that's 2 or 3 days worth of response. And then all of this, and then 2 or 3 days of response, we're back to normal. So here's the kicker. You look at in the wintertime, whenever the ground is saturated, we never have a 2-inch rainfall, and our flows never get below 10. So it tells us where our problems are. They're in the ground rather than our manholes that are sticking up on the ground, because it's not about a rain event in the wintertime where we're getting all our extra flows. That being said, our operations and engineering have put a lot of effort in this year on doing some things, and you guys have gave us the opportunity to try to look at things on the private side. Didn't turn out like we'd like, but you know, the effort is there, and I think from looking at it, because those events aligned in such a way that really our ground got pretty saturated in August, and we had a pretty quick recovery. So dare I say, a little bit optimistic what it might look like this winter whenever the ground truly gets saturated. I don't think the problem is solved, but I think we put a lot of effort into it, and I think we might see some improvements this year. Just looking at the data I'm seeing so far. That's what I've got. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
They say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and Todd's been telling us about all these IMO problems and flows coming into the plant for a while. I feel like I'm also optimistic. I feel like we've just touched the tip of the iceberg on some of the sewer rehab, but hopefully we'll continue to see those improvements. For the engineering report this month, had a pretty substantial number of reviews, plans coming in for review, 12 plumbing reviews, 33 civil plan reviews, a few fire line plans. We were a little bit low last month, so I think some of those kind of carried over into this month. Some of these of note, you know, we're still seeing quite a few of these multifamily projects come in. Cottages at Magnolia Farms East, and also a similar project west, are on Promenade Drive south of Walnut. So we continue to see that commercial subdivision fill in with multifamily.
That reserve jumps out ninth.
Yeah.
There were a couple of them at 6 and 7.
So the reserve, if you're familiar with the site across from the Rogers Police Department that they've been grading for,
mm-hmm. long time.
It's been over a year since we've conditionally approved that project, and they keep coming back to us with little changes for our policy. Once it's conditionally approved, we don't assess plan review fees for subsequent reviews. This project is kind of pushing the limits of the intention of the plan review process. But
is that apartments?
It is. It's multifamily.
They have one going in Bentonville right now that's on its 14th review. So,
okay.
It's been.
But we're not charging them the fee for the reviews that we had talked about.
Right. We're not, because once they got that conditional approval, it's been 3 months later, okay, we've got this little change, and then we've got another little change. And as they're going through that grading process, because they got the grading permit a long time ago, you know, they're requesting these small changes.
It's certainly something we might look at in the future. The impetus for the charge to begin with was they were giving us plans that just simply weren't written. And so we weren't going to, that's what the behavior that we were looking to improve. And we did, I think, do that. But then this has crept up. This is something we really didn't plan.
So this is just delays on their part, that then they keep coming back and change something else? Or
it's changes. Technically, they're changes during construction, right?
They haven't moved very fast on that at all.
What's the city do with that? Because obviously they're changing. I mean, are they going back to the city inspection department? Is the city charging for that plan review? Are they also, because they're going to do it both ways, whether it's us and the city?
To be honest, I'm not sure if they're assessing fees. I know, we're consistent with the city and consistent with the state health department in that. If construction is not started within 1 year of this approval letter, then you have to go back through this approval process. Well, they started construction, and so, they can say, well, we're approved and we're under construction. So,
see through that.
I can see through that. I think it seems to me like they're pushing dirt from one place to another and saying,
They're not moving.
Well, back on what Kathy said, and that's back on you all. I mean, if you feel like there needs to be a plan review, there needs to be a change in that policy, there ought to be at least some limit. I realize things change in that construction process, but I'll leave it up to you all. If it seems like nine seems to be, and maybe it's not, but when you kind of look down through there, if there needs to be a review of that, and there needs to be an additional fee, then because someone's been in the time to do that, and those people we have an investment in, so I think y'all look at that. And if it needs to be something, I certainly would support it.
Like I said, they're pulling the same song and dance in Bentonville. They got a grading permit, and we still, even with the large scale, require them to do an extension at the 1 year mark. They did apply for an extension. We typically only give them one, and then we cut them off. They applied for their one extension at the beginning of this year after their 14th review and their grading permit and pushing dirt back and forth. It sounds like the identical situation we're dealing with in Bentonville with the reserve.
Didn't we at one time say that after, was it five, that we were gonna, that they were going to get charged?
It's after the third review.
Third, okay.
So, Kathy, you remember when, this used to say fifth and sixth review all the way down.
All the way down.
And now we're first, second, and third.
Yeah.
Most of them, and that's what I think we fulfilled the intention of the policy. But we do have some outliers like that, and we've seen a few over the last couple of years, and many of them have paid quite a few review fees on fourth, fifth, sixth reviews before they get a conditional approval.
Yeah, this looks great.
Like Brent says, I think we might need to revisit this policy.
But I mean, this looks a whole lot better than it used to.
This
sounds nice. Not having the history that Kathy has, mine's not being critical at all. It was just when I saw that nine, and several, there were a couple of them, six and seven. Mm-hmm. I just know someone invested in being able to look at that. So, what a charge.
No, I understand. And it really, that policy really keeps us from doing their quality control work more than.
Yeah.
The project status. The pre-design concept, of course, we still have the capacity improvement project. We've been flow monitoring all summer on the plant, and now that we've got that data, I believe those flow monitors are being pulled this week, and while they were monitoring the flows, they've been developing a hydraulic model of the plant so we can see where our bottlenecks are coming through the plant. And so we'll be meeting with them in October, kind of looking at the results of those flows and the hydraulic model, and kind of putting together a scope of work for that concept plan for the plant capacity improvement. We have Chris and Ryan from Garver here today that'll be talking about the water transmission corridor and emergency connection study. Then we've got quite a few projects in design. One that's not mentioned up here is one that we're doing in house is a large water meter vault replacements. Johnny, I don't know if you want to tell them a little bit about the Tyson meter that we replaced lately.
So over here at Tyson Oil Ridge, we had a meter and it was actually had a leak in behind it, and we went over and changed it.
Did you talk to them after that?
No.
We're good.
Okay.
The bill is correct.
The bill is correct?
Yeah, the bill is correct. Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
The leak was on our side or their side?
The leak was on their side. We put in because we were made aware by a vendor that our turbine meter should be pulled out, cleaned, and all that every 5 years? Yeah, 3 to 5 years. We never done any maintenance on our turbine meters. So we're basically all of our large meters, we're going to ultrasonic meters and everything on those. When we changed out the Tyson meter, our billed revenue went up. How much, Brent?
It was a $160,000 bill. We thought we had an issue there because of some of the ways it read and so on and so forth when the dime got back. Turns out that's not the case. However, going through that little fire drill made us, put some more priority on this meter replacement. We only have a handful of large industrials. They make up a lot of the revenue. So we need to make sure we get in there and raise the priority. And we've done that on the majority of them.
Yes.
There are two or three that we have not. That's we still.
So we've taken a survey of some of our large vaults, and a lot of them are in pretty bad shape. We've got water in them, and the old style meter. So we want to get those upgraded in pretty short order. So that's one we added to the list of design projects we've got going on.
Is it a whole meter replacement, or just the register, or what is it?
That's a whole meter replacement for us. We'll be going to the ultrasonics
Oh, yeah.
on all of those. So, And I think the difference was like 8 million gallons in a month that we wasn't billing for before.
And how long will that take to get those switched out?
It's going to take a little while. I mean, a three and four inch meter vault is a big poured in place concrete structure, and a lot of times we'll have to bypass the existing meter to construct it. So it'll be a construction project, and I think we're probably going to end up having probably 8 or 10 of them at least.
And a lot of them too is that now we can bring them up to state health code where they're not a, when they were put in so long ago, they don't meet the state health code and stuff, so we can upgrade those and get those up to the standards now. Okay. So.
We had one out to bid, Walnut Street widening from 8th to Dixieland. I will say that the Highway Department has since pulled that bid advertisement due to the fact that they realized that they're not going to be able to maintain two lanes of traffic each direction.
Could they not have figured that out like 10 years ago when they first started looking at them?
Yeah.
Wow.
Asking a whole lot.
Well said.
Goodness.
That was my observation as well. That has been told. We might have to go back and, if they really want to keep that requirement, I think we're really going to have to look at our sanitary sewer design, widening the 5 lanes. Our sanitary sewer is right in the middle of the turn lane, in the middle of the street. I'm not sure what that's going to do to the design or how far that's going to push back the timetable, but it was disappointing to say the least, but we'll circle back around with the Highway Department on that. We received the bids for the dryer equipment for the RPCF. That'll be the next item on the agenda. Pinnacle Champions sewer improvements. I said last time that's been moving pretty slowly. After of course they're finishing cleanup work this week, and then the LPGA they'll be offsite, and then after the tournaments in late September, early October, they'll be putting some more crews back on site to try to catch us back up to the schedule. But so far, I think everybody at the country club has been okay with the work going on there.
So the picture of the crater, the Blossom Way.
Yes.
That's a big hole.
Yes, I'll skip down to that one here. So this is the Blossom Way sewer improvements behind. This is behind the Mercy Hospital. That's approximately a 30-foot deep trench. This is replacing the 30-inch pipe, the fiberglass pipe that we're replacing with ductile iron. It is a very large excavation out there. The reason for that is at the bottom here, you can see that you've got a rock shelf where they originally trenched in the pipe when they had to blast the rock out of there. Typically, in this kind of an excavation, a contractor would use a trench box, and they would have a very narrower excavation. In this case, they would have been forced to lay their trench box on top of this bedrock, which, that would have created an unsafe situation. So they felt they didn't have any choice but to bench this trench back and have about a 60, 80 foot wide excavation. So it's quite a job over there. But if you look on the side close to New Hope Road, they've done a really good job restabilizing those slopes and getting all the seed and straw back down.
So this is the area that was leaking,
yes,
that had kind of collapsed?
Yes.
Okay.
It was. And if you go down there right now, you can see they've got the sewer plugged off and diverted upstream. And there's a pretty consistent stream of crystal clear water coming out of that pipe, or it's leaking further upstream where we haven't replaced it yet. Part of the reason that you're seeing a little bit better flows at the plant is because of this project right here and the fact that we've got that leaky pipe plugged off.
Okay. So I asked you last week that is that water going across Bellevue and 28th? Right now they got Bellevue where the roundabout's going in, J.B. Hunt Drive. Is that water? Is that a water line that's going?
Yeah, there's a water line there.
So that's right in front of you, or I'm assuming that's for the city. That's on Bellevue.
J.B. Hunt Drive.
They've begun working on that roundabout. Yes. That's our work in there, RW. Okay.
Right. Yeah, they're laying 12-inch water line across the road.
I was looking at the map that I got when I first came on. I was trying to figure out what was going on there. But so it's going to the Lindsay Apartments is what we're getting.
Well, it's actually part of a larger. In our master plan, we had two projects shown in there. We had an 18-inch water line coming under I-49 and then feeding west along J.B. Hunt Drive.
Okay.
Because basically we're trying to push more water across I-49 and to that new growth area. Okay. So that J.B. Hunt project is part of that.
Okay. Nope. One of those that we did a facilities expansion contract on paid for the upsize from where that came underneath 49 all the way over to where it connects.
Right.
Okay. Where you see it connecting now.
Okay. Well, they had dug down, and then it looked like they took that road even further down. So, a lot going on there.
Make that into back up to some notable bits. We have been shifting some positions around. We filled our position for senior engineering tech. We brought in an experienced field technician, and so I took one of Johnny's guys over there, and we filled the position for design tech, and we actually have a young man who's going to school for civil engineering, was in inspection, and he applied for the senior tech position. We offered him design tech to move in here and get a little bit more experience in the office doing some design work, and so he accepted that, and now we'll be backfilling that construction inspection position.
Is he out of school, did you say, or still in school?
He's in college right now. He's going to NWAC for, I think, some engineering science classes right now. Taking differential equations this semester.
Fun.
Yeah, I don't.
So y'all don't have him full-time now?
We do.
Oh, you do?
We do. Great. We worked it out where if he has to take a class during the day, he'll stay a little bit later and finish up his work.
Great. Flexibility.
We try to be flexible if they need us to go to school. City Works and GIS. I know Aaron's been working diligently with Brandon on reconciliation of about over 7,000 water services, and the addresses don't quite match what we show in the Tyler database. So to make everything work, we've got to make those addresses match exactly so that we'll be able to put in work orders in City Works and it'll be able to communicate back with Tyler. So that's been kind of a technological hurdle that we couldn't really find a workaround for other than go through all these addresses manually, and it's been quite a chore.
22,000.
We were able to automate 22,000, so
is that due to the post office? I mean, how does those? Because I know on my address that all of a sudden, it's been Blossom Way forever. Well, now it's West Blossom Way. Does that affect? And I don't know when that came in. Then sometimes I put an address in and it'll come up with a different. It'll have at the end of the zip code. So I didn't wonder, is that something the Postal Service has done that creates the differences? Or?
No, sir. This is so our.
Don't go deep into it. It's just.
Our old surveyor got shot on a lot of the meters, and he put in, he's just hand typing in the address.
Different
so
issue.
If he made an error, if there's any issues there, and then of course the front office, when they enter the address, and it's making those two address names match close enough that I can link them.
22,000?
I got 22,000 doing an automated process, so just about
From Woodbridge. Whenever things input by hand, you have some people input RD period, and the other ones say road. And so technology talking to each other doesn't really
matter. Once it's clean, it'll be clean. Good luck.
So next week we'll have, or at least the engineering staff here will have training over at City Hall for the PLL. That's the permitting lands and licensing. That's all our plan review processes in City Works. The following week, first week of October, we have our asset management training here in this room. And then Go Live is going to be October 9th. So the date is upon us. Mm-hmm. Notable events, I talked about Walnut widening, the Blossom Way sewer that we talked about just a minute ago. That is current, that stretch just upstream of the photo there is currently held up due to Black Hills. They've got a gas line that was laid right in the sewer trench where we cross the stream over there. And so they're working on a contract to relocate that 4-inch gas line with a borer under the stream and relocate it out of our way so we can dig the rest of that sewer line up. Right now it's not holding us up. We've got a contractor working on a different sewer job at 24th and Olive, trying to get that one finished up. So hopefully Black Hills can move quick and get out of our way so we can get that one finished. And then we received the dryer bids. Talked about that photo. Thought I'd just include a couple of photos of our material storage improvements out there. This is the lilac tank side. So we've got our new yard over there and our topsoil sifter with our material storage bin. So they're making use of that. Any questions on the engineering report? Okay. Move on to new business. Okay, I'll just stay where I'm at. Okay. Before we get too far into this, I'll give you a brief, very brief history of how we got to where we are now. I think back in about 2018, I think we started looking at, actually it was probably before that when we were looking at concept plans, but I'll go back before that. And I think 2011, we had the Thermoflight dryer installed plan. And this was in response to a requirement that that we could no longer land apply our sludge. Since then, I think over the years we've had a series of issues with that dryer. That Thermoflight has gone out of business. Every part that we have to get for that dryer has to be custom engineered, custom fabricated, and so it's paid for itself by drying the sludge that we have to now haul outside of our watershed. However, it's become a costly maintenance item, and it hasn't been the most reliable piece of equipment. In 2018, we started a project that would give us a new dewatering centrifuge and also make our solids handling process more efficient. We had some conveyance and a silo for automated truck loading. That was phase one of our solids handling. And phase two, when we looked at that, was to replace the dryer and provide for future capacity with redundancy with a more reliable system. And so in 2020, we contracted with Hawkins Weir and to look at an
an alternative drying system, and we went back and looked at basically everything that was available. We looked at, you know, we looked at composting and solar drying, and you know, we, that study told us that thermal drying was still the most economical and most reliable alternative. We went through and filtered down all of the thermal drying options, all those different technologies, and basically came up with, landed on two drying technologies that we sent out to bid. And that was the Huber system and the Weiss system. Hawkins Weir then developed two sets of plans, each 15% level of completion, and we based our bids and specifications off of those 15% plans. We brought in Crossland Heavy Contractors as our construction manager. They provided all the estimated costs for the site work that would be built around each dryer system. And then we sent each dryer system out to bid, and we received proposals from these two manufacturers. So we had the bids for the equipment, and we also included the estimates from Crossland Heavy Contractors for the total project cost that's summarized here. Did I miss anything?
The only thing I would say is not only do we rate the reliability issue, but probably the capacity.
Right.
Especially the wear time. We pretty much run it for all, you know, 24/7, all the line we get on there, and all the time we can make it run. So we have reached the end of what that dryer is capable of.
Is this a single system? You said, is this one or two systems in this?
This is two. So this is two machines. One of these machines will handle our capacity for, I believe, operating 10 hours a day.
But we're looking at two. Just these numbers, and I've tried to go with this number, but it's two.
We're looking at two. So right now that'll give us redundancy, and in the future that'll give us capacity if we wanted to run one full time.
In theory, we could do one. I want to say, I think towards the end of the design life, we had to run a little longer than 10 hours to get one to meet the full capacity of the projected. So we would have a redundancy for all the way through the lifespan of the project.
Okay.
All right.
So we do have a recommendation letter from the design team for the Huber system. I'll go through the matrix real quick. The bid came out at $12,372,839 for the Huber versus $15,301,061. For the Conline Sanderson or the Weiss dryer. These are two different designs. The Huber is more of a belt dryer, just like a really large pizza oven. The Weiss system is more of a vertical tray design where it's a rotating series of trays that the product falls through. So, as that product moves, it's heated and dried. So it's basically the same process, just two different designs of the equipment. But we ran through the capital cost and the life cycle costs for these pieces of equipment. And just about every metric except for the annual maintenance, the Huber was the less expensive option. The Huber is a little bit more complex. It's got more motors. It's got more moving parts on it. That is the reason for, generally the reason it has a higher annual maintenance cost. But just about any metric, I think the Huber comes out on top and is the recommended option for this bid. That being said, staff does recommend acceptance of the bid by Huber, allowing us to negotiate the final form and content of the equipment purchase agreement. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I've got, also have Brett and Josh here from Hawkins Weir that can help me answer any of your questions.
Brian, did either of the two dryers, did they both produce the same class solids at the end of the day?
They do. They're both okay. They're both class three.
Oh, class three. Okay.
How did these prices come in compared to what you're expecting?
The Weiss came in substantially higher than what we expected. The specifications included some auxiliary equipment that wasn't included in their initial costs that they did to us. And those costs especially were a lot higher than what they did.
But this $12 million, that the taxes, that's everything. Because I knew the Weiss didn't have included that.
Huber did include taxes in their bid in this $12,372,000.
What's the history behind both these companies? I know with like wet wells and things like that, there are a couple of players that have been in the game for 50, 60 years. And y'all are talking about with your dryer now that they went out of business and y'all are having to custom fab pieces because they're out of business. Do both of these have a long track record of being in the business for a while?
Huber's probably one of the bigger names in the wastewater industry, in the process industry. They have a lot of municipal experience.
Yep.
And Todd can jump in here anytime. But Weiss is a very much smaller player. Most of their applications, which are few, have been on the industrial side. I think it gave us a little bit more comfort when Weiss was bought out by Combine Sanderson, which does do a lot more work in the wastewater industry. So that they gave us a little bit more confidence in offering
long term
the RFP to Weiss.
Weiss has been actually in business since 1940.
Okay.
Or somewhere in that vicinity, and they had some initial drying applications in some really large cities, but they got away from that in their business model recently, and then they've recently been trying to get back into that market. Huber, I want to say they started doing actual dryers back in like 98, 95, somewhere around in that range. So with Conline Sanderson's acquisition, it definitely gave us a little bit of a comfort level, because prior to that, Weiss was a privately owned company. Weiss was actually owned by Ed Weissmont.
Yeah.
So it was very much a family business prior to my changing. So it was a comfort. So it did even the playing field in terms of stability.
Okay.
So have we had an opportunity to go look at this equipment someplace?
Yeah. Springdale has one.
Springdale has one. So we're from number one. So first point is we don't have an option. We've got to do something.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Is something has to be done. So we've been able to look. We know. We're familiar. We've seen it. So we feel good about what we're going to be purchasing. And then the last question is, as far as how do we pay for it? How do we pay for it? How does that, as far as $12 million that's in the budget for capital improvements?
Yes. It's over that SRF loan.
Yeah, okay.
And we'll be doing closing documents on that.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Yeah, we've got roughly 2.5 in just grant money as well.
Okay.
So there are some pay milestones as we go, but we don't pay the tax until the end.
Okay.
We are working with the CFA, at least asking the question, and working with possibly BQ to see if there's a way. Include this is somehow not exempt from treatment equipment. So we'll ask, we've been asking, and we'll continue to ask, see what we get to. But it's notable, right now what you guys see, it looks like one was clearly, lower, but that even back in January, the numbers that we had were neck and neck. I mean, there was not much around $500,000 difference, and actually it's on my attention. Mine was less expensive in January 2023. I think the biggest surprise for the entire team was probably the price we had ever seen from Combine Sanders in the last month.
We did read those comments pretty close, because when you start trying to figure out what that really means, because you look at it and think, well, there's a significant difference in the money. When you start reading those comments, you're kind of wondering, okay, what did Huber miss? Is there something that flows back in there? Because there are some things that kind of jump out at you going, so in trying to compare apples to apples, you're kind of going, so we're obviously taking the total base bid, but again, you start reading those comments, hopefully you end up with total base bid.
It is more complex. We had concerns with that.
Is that fair? I mean, I just run for a reason. These are some of the kind of ways that could add up.
Yeah. And Springdale's got the exact same units that we'll have.
How long have
they had them? Yeah, how long have they had them?
So, you know, we're not off into the wild, wild west here.
No,
they had a lot of learning issues with that hopefully will shove us up the learning curve. Feel pretty good about it. Once it got started, we've heard nothing but good.
I think it took them about 9 months, I think, to really get them comfortable with the process. Yeah. I think they started up in 2019, I think.
Yeah, they purchased theirs in 2017 for around $8 million, less hoppers and less. The boilers. So it seems like we're going to. Time that's passed, that does seem to hold as a good number for any kind of reference at all. But we were, as Brett said, we were all surprised by spawn came in so high.
So, with the Thermoflight, there was nobody around here that had one that we could get parts from, and that was part of our problem. So, Springdale will be reciprocal. I mean, would they be reciprocal with us if we needed them?
I have a very good relationship.
Okay.
We share knowledge.
So what's the time frame if we approve this? What's probably 6 months, a year? How far out are we?
A year.
Does that allow us? Obviously, we're either at capacity. Will we be able to get through that year?
As long as you can get with one unit.
I don't want to know that.
We will push everything we can through there. The construction process may provide some interruptions to that. I'm hoping to keep those in the summertime when we have some flexibility. But going back to our relationship with Springdale, they've offered some excess capacity, and we've already tested that and kind of run some test batches with Springdale. So we'll do this to whatever we can. We may have to do some haulage to Springdale and utilize their system. They've offered that. They have some.
Good.
We have a backup plan, but we're hoping to process the majority of on site. Because the less you have to transport it, the less expensive.
Well, I appreciate Springdale working with us. Yeah. Likewise, if we get Arizona, we'll work with them. So that's always good.
You go ahead.
Brian, I would add that the construction should actually go quicker with it, just because we can. Contractor can proceed with the construction of the building while the equipment's on order.
Oh, good.
So
okay.
The construction can move forward at a quicker pace. The building's going to have to be constructed around the last mark.
Good to know.
Yeah. Okay. I'll make a motion that we accept the bid by Huber Technology in the amount of $12,280,042, allowing staff to negotiate the final form and content of the equipment purchase agreement.
I'll second it.
Nope, that's wrong. It's $12,372. Okay, I will amend my motion to accept the bid by Huber Technology in the amount of $12,372,839 and allowing staff to negotiate the final form and content of the equipment purchase agreement.
And I will second again.
The motion and the second. I'm not going to try to repeat that, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The ayes have it 5-0.
That's good, good work. The review by Hawkins, and just to go down there line for line. That's good work. Thank you.
Real happy with it. Okay, now that we know what we're going to order here,
$12 million.
We've kind of been in this holding pattern with our engineering contract. We've seen 15% sets of plans, and now we know which direction we're going. And so we'd like to request an engineering amendment for the Hawkins Weir Engineers. This is going to be hourly fees not to exceed $2,555,000. And so this is for a construction project that's valued at approximately, I don't know if I have that figure in front of me, it's approximately $32 to $33 million. And so that's including the equipment that we're agreeing to purchase. So I know that $2.5 million sounds like it is a large engineering contract. It comes out to about 7.5% of the estimated construction cost, which is reasonably in line with what I would expect using that metric. And they will be working coordinating closely with Cross and Heavy Construction and Huber for the equipment. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You set any timelines for them to have the 12 months?
It's 12 months, and that's 12 months, I believe. Is that for the, that's for the final plans, right?
It's a 12-month design phase. We're hopeful that we can do better than that. A lot of it's going to be predicated on when we can actually get this number of you from here.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously we've got to tie in all the equipment at that point. You know, if they stay on their schedule, I think we should be able to beat that.
Can it be phased? Like you said, a building can be built first.
Yeah,
so can you do a box?
We actually, so we've got the design phase. We do have some early packages that we'll probably work with the CMAR. Cost one heavy to get out, for example, two EMBs.
Yeah.
The building we're building for the solids building, unfortunately, is in the same footprint of the existing maintenance building.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to work with Rogers and their person on the plant side to relocate the maintenance building. But both of those packages could go out early grading packages, those kind of things, so we can get in construction. Quite frankly, I think with ARPA funding, we've got to
spend some. Yeah.
Yeah,
Brian, I would encourage you to, when y'all are negotiating this, to get that phased in there so y'all can keep it moving and it's not waiting until the 12 month mark. Because I know everybody's busy right now. So.
How big of a building is this that's going to house this thing? Out of curiosity.
It's almost a box. It's roughly 140 foot square. It's a little more narrow than that. 120 by 140 approximately.
How tall?
Well, this building should be on the order of around 25 to 30 feet. The Weisskopf is going to be hit.
It was going to be about 60, I think.
It's going to be about 60. The Weisskopf building was going to look like an aircraft hangar in comparison for roughly the same size building in plane.
Very good.
Those phases clearly.
Yeah, I just want y'all to be able to make hay while the sun shines. Like you said, you got some grant funding that needs to get spent, and just keep y'all moving. I know that a lot of our contracts for our bond stuff, when we gave them 12 months, we gave it 11 months and 29 days.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that we're getting stuff as quickly as possible.
I think everybody agrees it's great to do.
Brian, I'll say that. That's already in our scope of service
today.
There's already good packages.
Great.
I mean, that was our plan.
Awesome. Good to hear. Glad to hear that.
Brian, I'm sorry, I'm slow of brain here. What exactly are we amending?
So we're amending, we originally had a, I guess I should have brought that original agreement. We had an original scope of services to study the drying process, and that's where we went through and had a kind of studied all those different technologies and narrowed it down to these several we were looking at. We had subsequent amendments that I think got us to the 15% design phase. We had another amendment when we were looking at possibly doing a pilot project on a third technology that we've since ruled out. And so we've kind of been, you know, dragging this thing out a little bit, for lack of a better term. Yeah. But we really went back to the drawing board on this thing. But
so the $1.3 million that Travis has alluded to, that money's already been spent. We've invested that in the analysis.
We've invested that in the analysis and the the 15% concept plans for each one of those technologies.
When you add that to the 2.5, now you're getting into more realistic percentage-wise.
Right. Now we're at 3.2. Now we're about 10%.
Which is what I was. Yeah.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. When we were saying 7, I forgot about the other.
All right. Well, I'll make a motion to approve amendment number 4.
Second.
A motion and a second to approve amendment number 4. All in favor say aye.
Mr. Chairman,
I need to read that in.
It would be sufficient for the motion to say approve the proposal as submitted or presented. But there needs to be some action that captures the staff's recommendation to approve the design amendment with the hourly fees and allow the staff to negotiate the final form.
And so we have a motion and a second to approve staff recommendations for the design amendment with hourly fees in the amount not to exceed $2,555,000, allowing staff to negotiate the final form and content of the agreement. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The ayes carry 5-0.
Thank you.
I'm excited this started. This has been a long time. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do all that work up front so that we didn't end up with a thermal.
Yeah, really.
It's money well spent. It really is. It's money well spent.
Well, you have to applaud the people out there that continue to keep it going. It sounds like they've had to use everything they possibly can just to
MacGyver.
Yeah.
The MacGyver in it.
They've got some gum and some
paper clips.
Paper clips holding it together right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, gum and paper clips and all that.
Build a helicopter.
Getting ready to fall apart, man.
Yeah, pleasure to be here and see some new faces. I'm Chris Button, Senior Project Manager of Garver. We've been master planning water and doing a lot of things. Things continue to change and evolve, but Rogers Water Utilities has done an exceptional job on, you know, making sure we're doing what's best and keeping up with everything. And it's really a collaborative effort. Work with Brent and Brian and Steven and Aaron and Johnny. Even Todd. Todd's got a good background, so we'll go ahead and get started. So today we'll discuss the following topics. We'll give you all a little bit of background. I'll turn it over to Ryan to go through the emergency connections, the alternative analysis, then lastly the route study, and then we'll talk about the path forward. Another contract amendment. So background. Rogers Water Utilities completed a 2016 Water Master Plan that we had the privilege to work on, and we also did the 2022 Master Plan update, and these Yeah, generally fall on a 5-year cycle. That's, you know, you're very good at projecting things on the short term, but, you know, far out, you know, you need to continue to reevaluate things about on a 5-year basis. Otherwise, you're going to get in a situation where you're maybe behind the curve. But when we did our 2016 master plan, as you'll see here in a minute, it was really growth-based and, you know, projected a lot of growth to the water service boundary, specifically out west toward XNA. But when we did the update in 2022, you know, it's a lot more risk, and risk is becoming a more and more important factor in planning. And a lot of it has to tie with regulations with your risk and resiliency and emergency response planning and, you know, just operations and maintenance of infrastructure that's getting aged. And what do you do if something breaks? And Brent talked about it earlier, you know, Bentonville had the issue with their line, their transmission line, and, you know, luckily they had those emergency connections to the Rogers Water Utilities to allow them to make the repairs, but not in that situation yet, but we want to get ahead of it. So again, the expansion back from our 2016 master plan, you can see the area in the blue right there. I think that's a little bit over 1,000 acres. Essentially, we were planning on how do we serve that area, plus the continued growth within Rogers Water Utilities current service boundary was a significant factor. And, you know, essentially those projects we identified in 2016. We fast forward to 2022, you know, essentially all our recommendations were implemented within the 2016 master plan. Rogers Water Utilities is still in great shape, but, you know, we wanted to, you know, further increase the, you know, the robustness and mitigate those risks. And you can see the map here is essentially a kind of a map. The blue lines are the existing water lines, Beaver Water District and the high service pump stations in the bottom right of the corner of the page right near the scale. Essentially, we've got two age transmission lines. We've got a 30 and a 24-inch, essentially a single feed to the city's system. So how do we mitigate that risk?
That's how we get our water, right there, those two. They run parallel. I mean, if something happens there.
Yeah, and likelihood if one were to break, it might cause the other one to break as well.
So plan A and plan B is in right there.
In the same trench.
That's why we're doing it. Well,
I'm thinking it's crystal clear.
So a little background for different reasons, but back in the 2016 Water Master Plan, we conceived this 36-inch transmission line to provide adequate demand for all the western expansion as well as redundancy, but it was really driven by demand-based and needed to happen pretty soon if that area out west were to grow. So with the emergency connections, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan.
The whole intent of the study was to determine how we can mitigate that risk associated with a single supply. The first step of this process was screening some potential emergency connections with some neighboring water service providers. So, as you guys might know, you currently have two existing emergency connections with Bentonville Water Utilities in the northwest part of the system. Unfortunately, the hydraulics of those connections are not suitable to send water from Bentonville to Rogers Water Utilities, consistently. So we went through a process with these guys here and evaluated some potential options to establish some new emergency connections. Some of the ones that we evaluated were one with 2-ton or the BWR PWA up north. They are currently designing a new 54-inch transmission main, and we started coordinating with them to potentially install a T to create an intertie between Rogers system up north and then the new transmission main. Out east, we have the BCWA number 5 connection. You guys have a single feed crossing the lake there, serving some customers across the lake. If that supply were to ever to break, those customers would be left without service. So establishing emergency connection with BCWA number 5 would be beneficial for the system and those customers out there. Another connection we evaluated was a connection with Springdale Water Utilities down south. That's the SWU. They have a 16-inch diameter water line out there, and establishing a connection there could potentially benefit not only Rogers Water Utilities, but also Springdale. Lastly, potentially the most beneficial emergency connection for Rogers Water Utilities would be establishing emergency connection out by the Mount Hebron Park, where we have identified a potential location for a elevated storage tank or grad storage tank for Rogers. Through that area, Bentonville has a 48-inch transmission main crossing Rogers Water Utilities service area, where they have installed a T ready to be to create an intertie between the Rogers Water Utilities and Bentonville systems. during this process, we evaluated the compatibility between the two systems and the emergency connections. So here you can see about how much flow you can expect to get from each connection. Three out of the four connections, you know, are pretty limited supply. For reference, existing average day demands here in Rogers are approximately 12 million gallons per day. So you can see that, you know, that's not enough to satisfy supply if you were to completely lose the transmission mains or the booster pump station. However, Mount Hebron system or the Mount Hebron connection would be able to satisfy, or we think would be able to satisfy average day demands for the system. However, during the day, during those peak hour demands, you would drop below the regulatory minimum pressure limits of 20 psi. So you would be able to satisfy it for most of the day, but you would have periods of a time where those minimum pressures would drop below regulatory limits. One of the potential solutions we found for that problem was to install a ground storage tank and booster pump setup at the Mount Hebron tank site. This would allow us to fill those ground storage tanks no matter what time of the day, no matter when Bentonville is pumping up to their system. And that way, you know, Rogers would be able to operate their pumps and turn on the pumps whenever they need to satisfy or to raise those minimum pressures.
Let me pause. With Mount Hebron, that's tying into a Bentonville system.
That is tying into their transmission.
Okay. I thought I understood that, but even though with the storage tanks, but the Mount Hebron option is basically tying into a Bentonville line.
Correct. So as part of this analysis, we also came up with a rough order of magnitude opinion of probable construction costs for each alternative. Now, there are some nuances with each one of these alternatives. You can see that the prices are substantially different. But there's also a few other considerations that we need to take into account. So you can see the two-ton connection up north is by far the cheapest option. However, in the 2022 Water Master Plan update, we identified a potential water line going up Highway 94 that would need to be upgraded from an 8-inch to a 12-inch. So that cost is not included in that, but we had assumed that that would be done as part of the capital improvement plan. The BCWA number 5 connection, there is a gap between the BCWA number 5 system and the Rogers system, so that gap would need to be filled with a 6-inch water line. That is included in that price. The Springdale Water Utilities price includes the cost of a 24-inch upsize from an 8-inch, so that is a major cost consideration there. That's why that one is so much higher than it is. And then lastly, the Mount Hebron cost there is accurate. However, it does not include the cost of the ground storage tank and the booster pump stations. However, that is something that we plan, that is in the capital improvement plan from the last Water Master Plan update. So we do intend for that to be resolved. The next step of the study was to perform an alternative analysis. These are potential alternatives for how we can connect to the Beaver Water District Western Corridor transmission infrastructure. So we started out with four different alternatives here. Eventually, after a collaborative process with Rogers Water, we narrowed it down to the Alternative 1 and Alternative 2. Alternative 1 connects directly to the proposed Beaver Water District Western Corridor pump station, while Alternative 2 connects upstream on the transmission main. It has a gravity-fed transmission main, so Alternative 2 would likely require a booster pump station somewhere midway up that alignment. That would not be required for Alternative 1.
Brian?
Yep.
It says proposed. What is that? Tell me what that means.
They're currently designing it, and it will be.
But that's not something. It may. It, are we?
It's
5 years, 10 years, how far
out? I'll cover that here in a minute.
What's that?
I'll cover that here in a minute.
Okay, because that's what I'm saying. I saw the proposal, but I jumped out. And
it's actually under construction, the pipeline, and the foundation are both.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So like I said, Garver and RWU conducted a workshop and narrowed the options down to two alignments. Again, alternative one is the alternative where we're connecting directly to the Beaver Water District Western Corridor High Service Pump Station. Alternative two, we are connecting upstream on their transmission line. For this, we performed analysis based on non-monetary factors as well as monetary. These are some of the criterion we evaluated for the non-monetary side. This was also a collaborative process. We met with Rogers and put a level of emphasis on each one of these criteria. That way, we graded these alternatives, but also took into account how important those were to Rogers Water Utilities. Eventually, we got to a final score where we decided that alternative two was the favorable alignment by a pretty narrow margin. Again, we evaluated the capital costs and the operation and maintenance costs. You see here, the alternative one was slightly more expensive in terms of capital costs. However, due to the additional booster pump station required with alternative two, the operations and maintenance costs for alternative one would be cheaper than alternative two. And that's reflected here in this life cycle cost net present value evaluation. You can see around year 35, the cost for each one of these alternatives equals out around year 35. And from that point on, alternative one would be cheaper. Again, non-monetary and monetary evaluation showed that alternative two would be the preferred alignment. However, after meeting with Beaver Water District, it was determined that the Beaver Water District and RWU Memorandum of Agreement point of service requirements and additional monitoring and reporting Beaver Water District would not provide an alternative connection to the Western Corridor Pipeline. So essentially, they would not allow us to connect upstream on that transmission. And we would be forced to move forward with the Beaver Water District Western Corridor High Service Pump Station. the RAP study took the evaluation of this alignment a step further. We used the selected alternative from the alternatives analysis as a baseline, but then broke it up into two additional alternatives. Those two alternatives are seen here. Alternative one, primarily going through Springdale, then Lowell, and then up to the Rogers connection, where it would connect to the Mount Hebron site. And alternative two would primarily be passing through Cave Springs there on your left. These areas are rapidly developing with subdivisions, and so moving as soon as possible on this to secure easements would be in Rogers' best interest. For this, we used a triple bottom line evaluation to compare the two alternatives, similar to the alternatives analysis. We used different factors other than monetary considerations. These include social factors, economic factors, environmental factors, which you'll see on this next slide. We took Rogers Water Utilities' level of emphasis for each one of these items into account and graded each alternative for each one of these criteria. In this case, the lower score reflects the more favorable alternative. So in this case, it would be alternative two that we'd be recommending. And a lot of that is based on capital costs. Favor alternative two. Additionally, there's just less congestion in that route.
Getting your money's worth tonight. A lot of stuff's covered. So let's talk about a path forward. How do we resolve all this stuff? So as I mentioned before, continued investments are required. Y'all know that. This is a growing region. But essentially, we need to mitigate those risks. And part of Rogers Water Utilities is we need to provide dependable services to the customers. So that's what we want to do. So what we're recommending is proceeding with these emergency connections that Ryan talked about. We're recommending three of them. And we've also prioritized that based upon what Ryan had told you as far as the best use. But priority one is a connection between Rogers Water Utilities and Bentonville Water Utilities. Second priority is a connection with Springdale Water Utilities. And lastly, the third priority is Benton-Washington Regional Public Water Authority.
Why was two times last on that list when it was economically the cheapest? I know you went through the...
Yeah, part of it's just to do with the phasing. It's going to be several years before they have that line installed and we're able to make that emergency connection. We've coordinated closely, both I have and Brian have, with Scott Borman and others, mm-hmm. and we've planned out that connection. It's a schedule thing. They're years out from having that ready to connect.
Okay.
We did commit to helping them with the construction as far as paying a T and a valve out for us to connect to. So that made it into the design plan.
Okay, cool. So it's drawn in.
So it's
slated in.
We've got a placeholder in there.
Good.
I don't know if the question comes up, but this is from a different, obviously from a different treatment plant. But we have taken a close look at the water quality, which they, you know, it's almost identical if you look at the water quality from Two Ton and Beaver Water District. They use the same disinfection. So, there's no, you know, we've heard horror stories, you know, this is emergency connection.
Yeah.
But we don't want to have any unintended consequences with the new water supply like you've probably heard about in the news. So, there's no concerns there. So Garver and Rogers Water Utilities recommended proceeding with securing the easements as soon as possible. Ryan talked about the tremendous growth. Y'all are aware of the tremendous growth out in that area for this critical connection to the Beaver Water District West Border Pump Station with the new, still 36-inch water transmission line that we're recommending and we planned. I've got a schedule here essentially starting from today. I've extended it out through October of 2025, but essentially what we're recommending is having a contract amendment number one with Garver to amend our contract to add these services needed to plan the study closer and actually acquire these easements. We've got abstract and record research, property surveys, and all the environmental wetlands and cultural resources and habitat assessment starting concurrently, maybe as soon as October. And then we anticipate, because we've done a lot of work in the area, they're going to require a culture resource survey. There are some cultural sites out there for both alternatives. And then, essentially what we want to do is try to avoid any sensitive areas and mitigate costs and delays and just avoid those sites. So we do anticipate some surveys out there for archaeological work. And then moving forward with the topographic utility, geotech, and our conceptual design, as well as our cost estimating, we'll be able to more further refine our cost estimate and reduce our contingency and wrap all that up with preparing these easement documents. And then the last part of that is essentially I've programmed in about a year to acquire those easements. So easement acquisition is probably one of the most difficult and time-consuming processes out there. So
do y'all do that in-house or do y'all farm that out?
We've done it either way, and I know Rogers Water Utilities has also done some of that in-house. Do you have any thoughts, Brian?
We probably wouldn't tackle this one in-house. We probably
acquisition firm.
Yeah, we have some teaming partners, and we would also we do it in-house. But given the level, given this project, I'd recommend teaming with somebody specialized that does this on a day-to-day basis.
Just do you know offhand how many parcels that was?
It's ballpark about 30.
That's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It's still farmland for now.
That turns from 30 to 300 very quickly.
So
to answer your question, the Western Corridor Pump Station is underway. Construction's underway. This is actually a photo of construction. Crossland Heavy Contractors also happens to be the CMAR contractor on this project. They've got two construction contracts. They've let and awarded the pipeline, 60-inch transmission line from the plant to the Western Corridor Pump Station. The Western Corridor Pump Station is set up to provide service to the Big Four in northwest Arkansas. Scheduled to be complete early 2026. Both Fayetteville and Springdale have design underway and acquiring easements to connect to that. They also plan on connecting in 2026, shortly after the station is constructed. We know this project is a risk-based project for Rogers Water Utilities, but looking at the data in our master planning, Rogers Water Utilities doesn't need it for demands in 2032. But we, you know, as we've seen with all the development out there, our opportunity is becoming limited to have a reasonable route to connect to it. Land's not going to get any cheaper. Development's going to continue. And last thing we want is, you know, a transmission line through the middle of subdivision.
So that's 30 for all three emergency connections? 30 acquisitions for all three emergency connections? Or is that just...
That's just the pipeline.
This is for the transmission line. Okay. Yeah, we,
you
know, for the emergency connections, those are... Basically, I mean, you're basically looking at the site.
Yeah.
Limited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mount Heber, we've got 5 acres set aside from the Mount Heber Park project. Mm-hmm. That was kind of carved out for us because we knew we needed at least a water storage tank.
Yeah.
Of some type.
And actually put in 24-inch stuff.
When they built the park, they stepped out of 24 to get there. So we've been trying to set ourselves up
long term.
You know, long term. We do read these master plans really frequently as this development occurs across the
state. Chris, would you take back to the visual of my head's still kind of spinning. We've gotten a lot of information. Are we being asked to make a decision tonight? Or if the study's here, we can take a look at it. Will we reconvene next month and go through this?
Yeah, so Brian and I have talked a little bit about that. I'm assuming everybody's on board with this. We'll go ahead and draft up contract amendment number one and present that to you at the next meeting.
Could you give me the visual of what this, we had a lot of different, tell me back to visually where we're headed, because we had a lot of different things moving.
Yeah, so we narrowed things down to two options. And the blue option is the one we're recommending proceeding with. The red option has several road crossings and fittings and steel encasements, and it parallels the floodplain and within the floodplain for approximately 40% of the alignment. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest reason why we're recommending proceeding with the blue or alternative number two, which goes mostly to Cave Springs.
That's connecting with the Benton County.
No, that's connecting with the Beaver Water.
Beaver Water, kind of that blue box. Bringing that line all the way through from Cave Springs up to Mount Heber.
Yes, sir.
Initially, we had 5 different options.
Yeah, that's what I kind of got lost
for this transmission. We narrowed it down to one general alternative one here, and then we narrowed it back down to that general corridor. And now we're to the point of actually looking at this general alignment as it relates to kind of individual properties. And so those are
five
alternatives to one alternative, but then two subsets.
It's confusing.
They will allow, but we can tap into that line.
Oh, yes. It was designed for us.
Okay. Because I was kind of following through this. We had this plan, and all of a sudden they said no. The big red X.
Yeah, so since then we tried to.
Yeah. It wouldn't allow us to tie in along the line. It would allow us to tie in at the actual termination.
Okay.
Alternative 2 is something we strongly consider just due to the. That was the closest point that we could connect transmission main to their line. I think a lot of the rub with that was that the way that green the Beaver line was designed is they used that time that the water was in the pipe as their chlorine contact time. So if you look at it from a permitting standpoint, we were going to draw water before the water was down.
It's making a little more sense. But I just at that one, and again, when it was the X, I'm thinking, well, do you not know that initially, rather than going down that path, only to find out that that's not going to come. Okay.
I wish they would have conveyed that to us.
They just said it. That saves some time and
energy. Well, they never told us no before we, I think, had
all. We've been planning it for a while, talking about it. And
they said that's part of our CT time. And
yeah,
you know,
it's the world.
Is there any value in, and I know, okay, so what we're being asked to do tonight, just look at it and move
And will we come back next month and go over this?
It's just a presentation.
Okay. Is there any value in the one up north? I mean, I know that had the lease cost took into to having two options, not maybe there's some primary option, but for $500,000, do you have that as a backup that was on the north? I know it didn't add a lot of the demand, but
it's a $500,000 now to put T and valve and some other things, but it's going to take us quite some time to upsize the line
to get
back into town.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know how far you had in the easements.
Yeah, there's a lot of ancillary work on that.
Okay.
And as you can see from this, I mean, it's worth noting, if you go back to all the alignments, Chris, there's a one on the far west there that was still on the table to share that possibly with Bentonville. Upsize there, share that cost, and come across on the 24. I think it was on the not only emergency but on the lines there. Transmission lines.
Oh, okay.
But the tying into Bentonville, that at that Mount Hebron, that doesn't work.
I saw you had a question. It's hydraulics. It's our tower sits on.
Right. And so Bentonville's. Bentonville's pressure plane, or the level of the water sits at in the tank, is about 20 feet lower than where our tanks
sit. And so
basically, it's easy for us to feed Bentonville because of that 20-foot hydraulic gradient. But in order for Bentonville to feed us, our tanks have to already be down to a level that they can flow in, unless we have some kind of a pump station to pump it over here. So, in an emergency scenario where we're already down, in a scenario where we have a transmission main failure, for the majority of the city, it would keep us in good shape, under pressure. There would be some isolated areas and some high elevations that would experience extremely low pressure.
Did I read in there somewhere there's 30 days that we had? Is there, did I read that? Do we have the, if we had an issue?
30 hours.
Is that it was 30 hours or 30 days? 30 hours. If we had a trial issue,
you have about 30 hours until
under normal usage. Is that emergency connection right there by the little wall?
Yeah.
That's one of them. The other one's on water tower.
Mm-hmm. But just to show the dynamics, we not that long ago, we're going to go almost all the way out to XMA and Airport.
Oh, gotcha.
I'll take that. So we had this master plan. Here's where we're going to go. And then we started looking at this, and now Bentonville's annexed quite a bit. So their line there that would have been shared, they've got to go much farther west now. Things just change. You do the best you can with moving targets, but the master plans are invaluable.
It's necessary, and yeah, I'm sitting here. My again, the general public does not have a clue, and I put myself in that category 4 or 5 months ago. The thought is that if there's a transmission, that you just turn a valve and we get it from somewhere else, or you flush the commode and it goes someplace else. People don't understand, and everything we talked about, they're necessities. It's from drying to having a plan A, plan B. And I don't think most of us who live here just take it all for granted that it's something's going to happen. And if it,
if it does happen,
it doesn't. And it's going to take the planning. So this is important stuff.
I will add that Bentonville's in the process of updating their water master plan, and they are looking at we're working for them too, to be full disclosure, but we're looking at putting a redundant line a little bit further west, so further increase their robustness of their system as well.
Well, at the end of the day, we all get, I think, if I'm right, we all get our water at the same place, right? Beaver Lake. So whether we fight with Bentonville or what, we can all work together because we've got to have that, and to fund all the growth that we see. Back to where I started out, the growth in the streets and everything that's happening is because we continue to grow, and it's the area people want to live in. But you got to have the water, you've got to have the sewer. And there's an expectation that you all are figuring all that stuff out that we've got to stay ahead of it. So
there's good coordination. Brent was over in my office last week, and they went over and were talking to BWU, and it was a good one.
And I'm glad that we got to again.
Yeah, as we grow and expand, now we're touching edges and driving. So, we plan on that so that we have a larger not a training that goes about this. For instance, if we would have been able to plan years ago, I mean a long time ago, we could have had a line all the way up to Benton or two times.
Well,
you plan as you grow out, it gets smaller and smaller. Well, now
maybe we need bigger and bigger.
Maybe we need to be a little larger in certain places.
Maybe a couple of years ago, and I didn't talk, but somewhere along the way, someone said that, you know, unless we do something, we're going to stop growth. Now, I don't know who's going to tell Mrs. Hunt and the people that are continuing to develop, but if you said, hey, we're done, we can't do anymore, we're out of capacity. Talk about values, and it's a huge impact. So,
we have to stay ahead of it.
It's got
to
be done.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a good report. I mean, what do you want us to do tonight other than just look at it?
This is just a presentation.
Yeah, it's good work.
And as far as our path forward, too, we wanted to hear y'all's thoughts and comments. We'd be happy to entertain any more thoughts or comments, but we want to finalize this report, submit it to the health departments, and then, like we mentioned before, recommend, you know, moving forward with an amendment to be able to secure these easements.
Some of the upgrades, I'd like to know what those links are. You said, you know, we're going to have an 8 to a 12.
It's all in the report. There's several technical memorandums, three to be specific, exact.
Yeah.
They go with this executive summary, and we'll get you the final report to pass on to the...
Those are the capital projects that were outlined in the 2022 master plan.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, but they're also shown in our TA.
Well, for me, I'd like to see a summary. What do y'all recommend? What do you need for us to do to make it official? But more importantly, too, is how I go back to how we're going to pay for it. You know, is everything we're talking about is obviously something that's got to happen down.
The beautiful thing about having master plans for all three facilities, and I love this, for being in this position. When we get on with HDR and start working on this rate study, all of these type of things are in there as capital projects. So here's what we need to do. How do we fund that? What does the rate need to be?
And for me, it's how do we pay for it?
Yes, that's exactly.
That's it.
Without knowing that, you go into a rate study, you don't have a target.
Well, and the thing is, if you miss something, and it's something that has to, what we talked about, the things that we've talked about tonight, there's not an alternative. You got to do this. You got to be balanced.
We will work with Caroline for those who will bring it to you next month.
Okay. Right. Perfect. Thank you. And good work. Thank you all.
Do y'all have any other questions?
Maybe for next one. I've tried to absorb what you said. But
well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Flashing that the wet is still ripping.
All right. Next, we move on to resolution 2328.
Yeah, that's
you, Tyler. We should have it on.
So, at the plant, one of the things that popped up on our condition today was our clarifiers. Have some cracks in them that's natural for their age, but they leak a pretty good bit around them. It's actually a violation that our inspectors haven't really noticed yet, but being proactive, we're going to try to take care of them. Problem is you can't, your typical coating, you've got to be down for long enough to do your prep, your clean, and then it's got a curing time frame and things like that. Your clarifiers end up being down for a week, 10 days. I can't do that for that period of time, so we have in our experience found a particular coating called OVIC that allows us to do prep and application in a day and put them back in service the next day. There is exactly one contractor that's certified to do that in this area. So that's the reason for the waiving competitive bidding. There's one guy who's qualified to do it. He's worked with us before and done a good job. as part of another project on our rehab, in fact, whenever we did our equalization facilities, because again, you know, your weather's prediction is only as good as, you know, it is in this area. So we didn't want to have a long period where those were out of commission. So it was kind of a similar situation. But we're requesting approval. Oh, that's our quote. Okay, good.
Back the other way.
Okay.
There. That's the backer.
Go back up to the 77.
No, I've got plenty to do on my own. There's two clarifiers, and the bid is actually for one. So the 152,650 is for both of those. So it's the contract will be on site for about a week, and to get them both done. So. That's what that we are recommending and requesting.
Hey, can you pull back up?
Back up?
Where we can see what you're wanting. What
your resolution.
Yeah.
The total on there.
Todd, this stuff been around a while?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It has been. We looked at it for some manhole applications as well. And we did some test pieces on it about 3 years ago. We even did a test piece out at the plant whenever we were considering different options for the equalization basin. We're all still in really good shape. And our equalization structure is still in really good shape. It's a very sturdy system. I'm really impressed with it. It is expensive, but for the downtime, it's a good trade-off.
I'll make a motion to pass resolution number 23-28, approving the purchase of OBIC polyurethane liner systems for clarifiers at the Rogers Pollution Control Facility, authorizing expenditure of funds for the purchase, waiving competitive bidding, and for other purposes.
Second. Motion and a second to approve resolution 23-28. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The ayes have it 5-0.
Thank you very much.
But now we're to backers.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll come back to y'all in July, I think, and ask for the Vermeer vacuum excavator. When we went to make the order, what had happened was is that they realized that they were having too many issues with the F7 or F650 chassis because of the weight of the equipment and stuff, so they were no longer going to put them on the F650. They upgraded to the F750, and the original what we asked for was $229,853.75. For them to upgrade to the 750, it's $235,916. And we just needed y'all's approval to go ahead and purchase at that new price.
What was it? Just $235.
The original price was $229,853.75, and the new price is $235,916.
Okay, so $6,000 or $7,000.
Yeah, $6,000 or $7,000 for the upgrade.
That's easy.
I would make a motion to approve vacuum excavator truck purchase upgrade there.
And a second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay.
Do you need a, in that motion, that 235, do you need a dollar amount?
Chairman, you can have a new price in that.
Okay. Have a sheet. Then 235.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 235,916.
235,916.
Absolutely.
So, I still an aye.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second to approve the 235,960 235,916 for the upgrade to the F750 chassis on the new Vector. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The ayes carry 5-0. Glad we found out before we bought it.
Yeah, we are too. We were happy with you know, them being honest and upfront that, and I guess they even had some built and they're actually changing out the chassis on those that were already
in design and being worked on or built. So the next one is we went out for our bids because, as you know, we told you that we have no longer any state procurement bids and stuff like that. So we went out, we posted a bid for new trucks for the 5500 Ram chassis and the 3500 Ram chassis. And what happened was when they come back, our chassis for the 3500 was $91,275. And then the bid for the 5500s was $97,065. So after me and Brent talked, we would like to go ahead and purchase the three 5500s. And we've already talked to the guy that put the bid in, and he's actually already purchased the trucks for us. He said if even if we didn't buy them, he has some fire stations around here that would go ahead and use them. But the price, the reason he went ahead and ordered them was the price was estimated to go up the next week $5,000 to $9,000. So he wanted us to get out and get our order in there before the price went up. So for $5,790 more, we would like to just make it a recommendation that we buy three 5500s just for the purpose that that gives us some more heavy-duty equipment where the 3500, we was settling with that. But when the prices come in as close as they did, we decided that.
So you're saying that for the three of them, it's $194,130?
No.
That's for two,
that's
right?
For two. For three, it's $291,195 for the three.
Okay. Johnny, these aren't just the chassis.
No, this just is not the chassis. These are going to have the beds on them, the heavy-duty Napide beds. And they'll be set up for our auto cranes and everything else. So it's just not the trucks alone.
That's included in the
$291,000, yes.
So I will make a motion that you purchase three 5500 trucks at a purchase price of $291,195.
Right. Okay. And these are in the budget.
Okay.
I was going to come back and ask.
I made a motion.
Okay. Mr. Frazier, do I have to repeat that, or is the motion saying that enough?
Here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you will announce the motion for everybody, that would be good. That way everybody knows exactly what the motion is, and there's a second, and then whoever will reflect what a new vote on.
We have a motion and a second to approve a bid for three 5500s in a total amount of $291,195. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it 5-0.
Thank you.
I didn't bring a pen today either. Of all the days, not to bring a pen. No, sit here. Unless anybody has any other items, I'm going to call the meeting.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. They're usually not.